Institute. Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Your ultimate culinary companion.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Welcome to another episode of Dishing It Out with me, Gary O'Hanlon.
And me, Gareth Mullins.
And this week we are going to be ambassadors for Irish tourism, restaurants, hotels, pubs, you name it. The foreign guest and the domestic guest. We will talk about where we want everybody going, who's hot. We won't go anywhere near who's not because we don't believe in that. And yeah, we'll be sharing places that we like, that we're hearing about, places we want to try ourselves, actually, because there's always loads of guys that we want to get our hands on.
Yeah, but the Irish food scene is just so hot at the moment, I think, and globally. Look, there's a lot of people looking in at what's going on, and a huge part of that, of course, is being led by chefs and restaurants and hotels, but it's our producers as well that we're going to give a little hat tip to here, because, yeah. You know, if you are rolling into a little fishing village, or if you are going somewhere, that have a look and see what cheese is in that place that you're going to, or maybe somebody has grown some oysters or smoking a bit of salmon, or maybe there's some really good beef that's happening there. And, you know, more than likely the restaurant that you're going to eat in that night we'll be serving it. So like, look for it, look out for it. And I think there's parts of loads of all around Ireland, there's really great things happening. So we're going to give you a few little tips and tricks and bits and pieces to help you on your way.
Yeah, looking forward to that. As always, we have our cooking technique of the week, and we're going to go straight into that this week with sous vide cooking, which is something that we do a lot of in professional kitchens, but probably not that many do it at home, Gareth. Have you much of that going on at Forbes Street by Gareth Mullins or no?
Through the years, it's a technique that was really spoken about. If you go back 5 or 6 years ago, it was the kind of done thing, wasn't it? It was sous vide is basically for people that are listening in and they've never heard of it. It's where you take normally a piece of meat, normally a piece of protein, and it goes into a vac pack bag, and with something else, normally with some aromats. So there might be some herbs in there. There's probably going to be a little bit of olive oil, some garlic. And then you're going to cook it at a regulated temperature for an extended period of time. So what does that mean? You're going to submerge that vac pack bag with the, I'll just use a lamb rump, for example. You'll take a lamb rump, you'll put it into a bag with some garlic, some rosemary, some olive oil, and then you'll cook it at a set temperature. So maybe you're going to set that water bath is where you cook it to 63 degrees. That bag is submerged in there, and then it might be cooked for 6 or 8 hours at 63 degrees. Now, you might think to yourself, why would you want to do that? What will happen over that 6 or 8 hour period is that piece of meat will get really tender, but there's no chance of it moving into a well done territory. It's going to stay nice and pink. So it'll get really tender. And then from a service point of view, what happens then is then we chill that product down in ice cold water, and then it can be reheated, and you're kind of guaranteeing that meat is going to be kind of really tender. Things like ribs of beef work, or like Jacob's Ladders works really well sous vide. Pork belly works really well sous vide. Some chefs cook fish in it. I don't like what sous vide fish. I don't like the texture that happens. You would think as a home cook, would I ever cook that way? I'm trying to remember the name of a brand. So basically, it's a little apparatus that's going to sit into a pot of water, and there's a small little fan at the a little jet at the end of it, and an element, and it pushes the water around, and there's a temperature probe on the top which sets it at 52 degrees, 63 degrees, depending on which recipe you're doing. And what it really is, it's a very precise method of cookery. So if you're at home and you're a very keen cook, you know, you can buy one of these little sous vide machines for, you'd probably get them for 100 quid now. They really looks like a little soup gun or a little hand blender.
A Nova or something is the one you're thinking.
You're definitely moving out of the world of novice cookery, and you're probably getting into the world of, you know, tempering into amateur professional cookery, you know, and yeah. It's just a way of, really, I'd like you to think about it as taking a secondary cut of meat and making it really tender. Like a
feather blade of beef.
Done. So a feather blade is that piece of beef where there's a piece of sinew that runs through the middle. And it has to be really cooked really slowly for it to get tender. Yeah. So it's definitely not for everybody's sous vide cookery. No.
My head chef in the Barton room at the K Club, the fine dining restaurant at the K Club, he loves it now. Because again, there's the menu just at the moment, I suppose, suits a little bit of sous vide cooking, like, you know what I mean? Like with rump of lamb at different little bits and pieces, chicken, other little things that they do, some duck dishes go in there, whatever it be. And for a busy kitchen, it can give you great kitchen management,
control
and great kitchen management whenever it comes to service time. So then basically you might hear people mention like the reverse sear, because obviously anything that's in a bag, it's compressed, it's in there. A lot of the times you'll hear Gareth and I here talking about pan roasting and rendering the fat and getting caramelization on the outside of meat. Obviously you don't get any of that, but what you do with that with sous vide cooking is when the meat comes out of the bag and you open the bag and you let it sit and you let it rest and you let it pat dry, then you actually sear it. So you kind of just do that process at the very, very end as opposed to the very, very beginning. So it's a little bit of back to front when it comes to service. And in that instance, if, you know, it's kind of hard to explain in our world, but if you've got 80, 90 people in a restaurant, everybody's coming in at different times, ordering at different times, sous vide's great because your table comes in and there's like three lamb little rump heart portions on. The order comes in, it's like bump, 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 you drop them in. It doesn't matter if they're in there a little bit longer than the other, because they're all going to come out the same way. You're just incorporating the heat back into it, and then you'll sear as you want to go. And it is, it's a good way. Where also it's absolutely brilliant is whenever you're compressing fruits or cucumber or pineapple. I did dessert last week that I did with a chili palm sugar where I wanted to manipulate a pineapple ring. And by vac packing it, we do it. I have this little BB parsnip dish that I do where I juice parsnips. So I pour a pure parsnip juice, knob of butter, two sprigs of tarragon into a vac pack bag, and then the BB parsnip. And then you compress the parsnip juice into the parsnip, and then you bath the parsnip. So in essence, I'm cooking a parsnip in parsnip juice, which is a more intense.
And really, to like, we're talking here about like the very fine dining end of cookery.
Yeah.
I mean, really, like, we kicked the idea around of using, putting this out as a technique, because I'm very aware that a lot of home cooks won't do this. But it's really just to try and debunk a lot of these words that are in our world.
See my wife now rolling her eyes going, yeah, you're making a parsnip taste like a parsnip. You put the kids to bed. And stop annoying my hole. For fuck's sake. Like, who cares about cooking your parsnips? But Nettie, some people like to know. Some people, not that many. So we're going to move on very quickly.
And we spoke about the world of Michelin there a few weeks ago. And really, when you're getting into very precise cookery, which is what that is, these are the type of skills and techniques that these kitchens use. And now even like sous vide cookery is used in your high street brasseries and bistros as well. The word really that I think is important to understand when it comes to sous vide is control, because you're keeping that regulated temperature the same to get a result at the end. So, you know, all the people that listen here, the thousands and thousands.
It's really cool to do an egg, actually, like 60, 64 degrees for an hour and six minutes, and then you put the egg in the shell and you lift it out, tap the egg, flat side, always tap an egg on a flat surface, and then you'll plop it out and a perfectly poached egg will come out of a shell. After 1 hour and 6 minutes.
There you go. So that's sous vide cookery for all you food geeks out there.
All the geeks out there, yeah. And there's probably like six of you enjoyed that segment. And for the rest of you, we're
sorry about that.
We're
a bit of crack now in a minute.
That one's for the wanker.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're going back to having the laugh now in a minute.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so up now, we had this idea because we seem to be getting a bit of love for the podcast with Gary and I and Ed, just together without a guest. So we said we'd do another one. So really, we're going to just talk a little bit about the summer is ahead of us. Tricks and tips around Ireland for where you want to go, what you want to do if you're away. And really, I alluded to it at the start, but I would say a little bit of research about the place that you're going to go to and what's the food scene like there. I'm going to just mention the word of Michelin, right? Because that's the Michelin guide doesn't only give you the ones that have the stars, it also has recommended restaurants.
Oh, yeah.
So we spoke about Dead A there a few weeks ago, I think, didn't we? We spoke about Amund, which is a restaurant down in Baltimore, down in Cork, that arguably is up there with one of the best restaurants in the country, possibly Europe, in the show for one of the best restaurants in the world, along with the other restaurants that we talk about on here, like, you know, Restaurant Patrick Ebo, Chapter One, all of these guys. But the recommended restaurants in Michelin is also something that I think it's worth looking
at. It's not easy to get into that yet.
No, it's not. And it's there's ones that, and what does that mean? It means that Michelin have went and they've, it's probably the restaurant mightn't be cooking to get itself a Michelin star, but it's cooking to a really high level. I'm going to mention another little restaurant down in Cork called Goldie's, and Aisling, that's cooked. Aisling, I know her from Eurotalk. She's been in around Euro, as to you, Gary. I ate down in Aisling's restaurant about 3 years ago with the Eurotalk young chefs, and she's really cooking really smart, intelligent, ingredient led food.
Do you know something really funny about Aisling? I remember, and Kate Lawler was probably the first chef that I would have known really well, prominent from Cork. And Kate moved, I think she's back in Ireland now, but she moved, she got married and moved to England there for a long time. But she used to own Fenn's Quay in Cork, which was a beautiful restaurant in its day. And whatever, around the time the Viewmount House opened in 2008, Kate was kind of going around then. And I remember seeing, Kate was going through a tough time near the end of her time in Fenn's Quay. I remember her posting one night, go, I'm after doing whatever amount of covers, and I just had another young cook with me, another young chef with me. And at the weekend gone by, Kate put up this post on Facebook about, like, Aisling, I think, got chef of the year there a few weeks ago, or a few months ago. And Kate put up this post on Facebook, but it was a memory of the night they did 60, 70 or whatever on their own. But I had vivid memories of looking at that post all them years ago going, Jesus, Kate, like, you can't be doing that many people with just one other chef. But that one other chef
was Aisling.
Well, and I was like, holy shit. I goes, no wonder then the two of them were able to grind it out. Like, you know what I mean? Because Aisling would have been very young at that point. But she obviously had her
It's a small little restaurant, but really, you know, laser focused on what she's trying to do. And
It's very much about head to tail and seafood, isn't it?
Yeah, big time. And look, we just had a really lovely meal down there. And, you know, like, when I think about Ireland as a whole, like, Cork just has so much wonderful things happening with it down there with food. I mean, the English market down there is something that,
like, every time I do the Today Show, I swing by the amazing English market.
And look,
I've
done many conversations I've had with different people down through the years that why Dublin doesn't have one of these English markets. Like, when you go over to, when you're in London, they obviously have the Borough Market, or when you're in, you know, all your big European cities, whether it's Madrid or Barcelona or anywhere, there's these big food markets. That's the heart of the city.
There's been talks for years about Smithfield or Ivy Gardens getting a big
Smithfield apparently here. Nearly got it, but there was something got to do with insurance that just the business guys just didn't want to invest insurance, because it was just so hard. But really, you know, when you're down in the English market, from butcher's counters to bakeries to people selling bread, jams, chutneys, marmalades, and I think Cork really champions itself so well when it comes to the world of food.
When I hear Cork, fishy is the first place that just jumps out at me.
Martin
Shanahan,
how long was that restaurant down there?
She's a long time, mate. Yeah, that's got a bib. I don't know if it still is a bib. It had a bib for years, maybe 15,
what's a bib? Because I know exactly what you're talking about. But
The Michelin Bib Gourmand is basically, it's a stepping stone to a star, but it used to be within a budget. You used to have to be able to get three courses under 39 euro or under 40.
I think they've upped it a little bit now, haven't they?
Well, nobody's ever officially said that. Like, Frankie and I will get to Frankie in a wee while, but nobody's ever confirmed that. Like, they say now it's 50, like 49 or 50. It probably needs to be. But I still see a lot of boys that are looking for bibs or have bibs still have a wee menu, whether it's a wee separate one sitting at 39 out of fear, I don't know. But certainly it used to be extremely good cooking, but at a budget. And
I think they used the word, I'm nearly sure they used the word homely in there. Like, they want food that's really approachable. But again, as I started off saying, by using the Michelin Guide, it's not just the uber high-end restaurants that Michelin look at. They also give out your big gourmet. They give out green stars. Aisling has a green star, as far as I know.
I'm not sure, there's a couple of them floating around, but fishy, like, Martin's been, look, there's loads of really, like, nice places now down around Kinsale. It's come on even leaps and bounds. You know, I used to do Chowder Fest every year. In the beginning, we used to, through the Donegal Food Coast Initiative and the Taste of Donegal. We used to run like a heat in Donegal to win and represent Donegal because they tried to have 32. They tried to have 32 every year. Like it used to be around Easter, April, around that sort of time every year. Somebody would go down, you'd wear the county jersey, you'd parade through the town and everybody cooked the chowder and it would be voted on by all the people coming.
Cool.
So Martin rang me in the early days and said, listen, man, Longford's landlocked, but you lived in New England and you're from Donegal, you can make a chowder, will you come down? And Frankie Fish and I used to go down, and I call Frankie Three Counties Frankie, depending on who's doing well in the All-Ireland. He's on the border of Armagh, Tyrone, and he's been in Westport, Mayo for fucking 20, 30 years. So he would usually throw on a Tyrone jersey and make a pot of chowder, and then we just go in the beer for the night. You know what I mean? It'd be good crack. But yeah, Martin Shanahan and Marie would really stand out as being at the forefront of hospitality in Cork as well for me. You know, just brilliant people. Worth a visit if you're in and around Kinsale.
And speaking of people like that, that's being at the forefront, I straight away think of Paul Flynn.
Yeah,
the tannery.
So we're into Waterford, yeah.
And when you think of, like, you know, Paul cooked over in the... He cooked over in London, yeah, yeah. I think
well,
he was
during
23,
the
24.
Paul left just as before they got the third star, but he would have been the chef that got
I don't think it was Paul that would have told me, but someone told me that it had two stars and he was the head chef there at the time.
Paul was the head chef, and then they got the year he just left because the opportunity to buy the tannery came up, and no time later
Have you eaten in the tannery?
Oh yeah, many times.
I've never eaten in the tannery.
Yeah, I've stayed down there and I've eaten down there. When Paul Flynn was in the Stampa, I asked Sarah Dan Derry to send me there. I wanted to go work for him back in the day and they wouldn't let me. Like, there was a chef out of the Gavroche that had been in the Cav at the time and she said, you're not going there because it's too big, it's too busy, you'll get chewed up and all you'll do is prep veg. And he says, I won't. But I really wanted to work.
Mick worked there, which I didn't know.
Yeah, Michael started his career in the Hudson Bay and then went to the tannery. And so did the guy that just got a star in Homestead Cottage. He was in Cregan's Castle for years. David Hurley started with Paul Flynn.
And Paul is a real chef. He's really about food, ingredients, proper. I done a dinner with him years and years ago and he done that crab brulee dish he does with the Malba toast and the pickled cucumber. So delicious. Yeah. So delicious. But real, honest, approachable cooking.
Well, there's those lads. You've Marty Shanahan, Paul Flynn, Derry Clark, Ross Lewis.
Gareth Byrne down in Campania.
You hear Gareth Byrne, you hear the names and you just think flavour, flavour, flavour. The red raw love of cooking and food just springs to mind right away. I saw Derry recently actually because he's in Goffs now, just 20 minutes away from
I wonder how many people know on him. I'm sure plenty do, but like Derry Clark, who was running a one-star Michelin restaurant in Dublin on Baggot Street, is now cooking down in Goffs with James Sheridan. Yeah. Again, cooking some amazing food, and you might be driving along and pull in there for a lunch, stay overnight. I mean, you're guaranteed to get a really, really wonderful meal.
Yeah, geez, how many brilliant head chefs has Derry Clark churned out, and all them boys really through their careers? It's amazing. Derry had a prawn dish, like a taffy prawn dish. Somebody said one time they sent him a picture, they were in Sydney, and he was like, going, That's mine. Your dish.
He's like, yeah.
So I do it as well the odd time, actually, because I would have worked with a guy in the Old Post in Cavan, Gareth, who's probably one of the best chefs I ever worked with, Gareth Galligan. And that dish would have been on the menu up there. And it was just like, you know, they add their own wee twist to it, but the foundation of that dish would have come from, well, you know, you have Seamus Commons, Quanji was in Leckervan, Seamus Commons, who's the executive chef of Not Granny House, was in Leckervan. I
haven't seen Seamus.
Stephen and Pichet.
Yeah, I was about to say Stephen Gibson.
And Cafe on Scene.
Yeah.
Came through Leckervan.
Yeah. And I think he was Derry's head chef for a good few years.
Yeah. So, like, you're talking about some of the best talent the country ever seen got through Derry's hands.
And then also, like, what's going on over in Galway, I think, I love visiting Galway anyway, but there's a really hot food scene over there. Like, I mean, you know,
JP's just invested heavily.
I was about to say, JP
his money where his mouth is. He spent a lot of money on a Near 2.0. Now he's reopened it. Good for him, you know.
Did he?
It's got a complete facelift. Restaurant, he closed it there for a few months to redo it. Yeah, it looks great. I haven't eaten in a Near, but it's...
I've eaten in Cafe Bodega, which is a Spanish tapas restaurant that he started with. And when Food on the Edge is on, Food on the Edge is a food symposium that's on every year, which for the first 5 or 6 years of it, I think it was always over in Galway, and I was going to it. But we always booked dinner in Cafe Bodega because the place was just full of chefs and, you know, really good wine, really great tapas.
I've eaten there a good bit myself.
Yeah, it's very good.
He's a good guy, and he does a lot for Irish food.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Giving you a helping hand with your food frustrations.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us. Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Subscribe for free on the Go Loud app and never miss an episode.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
That brings us then to the west of Ireland. I'm trying to think who else in Galway is doing really well at the minute.
Well, I liked what the lads are doing in Dough Brothers, you know, the pizzas that they were kind of... They were starting out.
Well, I have my own pizza dough recipe, but I use the boys' video for my method.
Never seen it.
Have you not?
No, what?
I'd say that video of, they did it, they threw it up on lockdown, just the method. Because obviously it's like anything simple. There's still technique behind it all. You know what I mean? So I've got a very definite pizza recipe that I've used, but not the first time I went to make it, but when I went to make it like maybe 8 or 9 years ago, as I remember looking at the boys, as somebody had said they threw up a video, and I jumped on YouTube and took a wee gander at it. And it's great when you see lads sharing something like that, you know what I mean? I'm sure, like, that's what food's all about, man. Like, somebody said to me one time, goes, why are you handing out the recipe for your Guinness bread every night? Like, it's easy to make.
Why not?
People, I goes, well, why wouldn't I? Somebody wants to make it, it's just bread, mate. It's just bread. Like,
but that whole approach to, especially a fine dining level, has changed. There once was a time where people didn't share those recipes, and now I think social media is what has more people talking to each other and sharing recipes, and you know, kitchen stoves and doors are opening up that we can communicate one another, because every dish and every technique has been done somewhere.
Yeah, it's if you very think you invented it, you're full of shit. You haven't, though. You know what I mean? But
are you trying to tell me you didn't invent that Guinness treacle bread? You told me that.
No, but then again, I'll tell you another thing, though. The one thing I'd say is I've never eaten another Guinness bread like my Guinness bread. You know what I mean? My mind's a wee bit sweeter maybe than a lot of others, but that's a personal thing. And that's where...
So food is, right?
That's where cooking comes in then, where like you get a recipe, you like the look of it, you get an idea, you like the sound of... And then you make it and you think, right, well, I'll add this wee bit. I like it like this, or I like it like that. And then all of a sudden, you have manipulated it, but you still respect where you got the idea from or the initial thought from, you know what I mean? Like, and like pig cheeks, for example, and that, like, I think of Frankie, ironically, I call him Frankie Fish, like, because Frankie Mallon and Anne Portmore, you know, I make no secret, I probably reference Frankie a lot here. Like, we're really good friends. We met the 5th of February 2009 in Residence 40, Restaurant 41 with Graham Neville.
How do you remember the date?
I always remember numbers and dates. I just have this thing with numbers that I remember them. And and he opened that year, June 10th, whatever it was. And Viewmount House had opened August 2nd, 2008. So I was open 5 or 6 months, and then he was opening 4 months or so after that day. We were in Restaurant 41 for a lunch, and there was 2 seats left.
That must have been a Eurotalk gig, was it?
It was a Eurotalk lunch, and Frankie sat down beside me, and we're best pals since that day. I'd say I haven't gone 2 days where I haven't spoken to Frankie since that day. Yeah, and that's the truth. But I remember eating a pig's cheek dish in Anne Portmore way, way back in the day, and I thought, geez, is there something that would suit me now, the way I cook? And I'm in Longford, you know, I don't have a massive amount of seafood on the menu, and I'd never seen a pig cheek before. And he said he got them from the roost, and it's just a braise. That's how you have it going. Obviously, he goes, it's a tough muscle. Is it a braise? He goes, yeah, it's a braise. He used to do it with Kelly's of Newport, the famous butchers in Newport. He did it with Newport or Kelly's black pudding and a vanilla bean apple puree, and then this little dress salad with a pickled onion. And then I've done them in a million different ways ever since, but I've had pig cheeks on the menu for a long time. So, and Portmore is one of them restaurants that has survived the winters in Westport, where a lot of restaurants don't. A lot of restaurants come and go. They struggle.
I've never been. Is it small or is it big?
It's like a little Mediterranean, little long, thin room. It's absolutely beautiful. You would love Portmore. There's no pretense to Frankie's cooking. It's all about the ingredient. It's all about the flavor. Derry Clark's never out of it. Chefs are in it all the time. He's one of them chefs that just isn't about the airs and graces. He's in the realms of Derry Clark, Ross Lewis, Paul Flynn, like Martin Shannon, where it's flavour, 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 buys good stuff, sells it at a price that isn't robbing people.
And you'd said to me there, Dennis Fahans, Fahans and Liscannor,
is it?
Yeah, I think it's just outside. Is it Liscannor?
Yeah, I think that's the name of the village. Yeah, that's another chef, when you talk about seafood that springs.
Yeah, I mean, he's like... I used to buy crab meat off Dennis years ago. We used to sell crab meat to the they used to produce it and sell it up to the restaurants around Dublin.
Oh, right.
That's kind of where I first found out about Dennis's cooking. But he's same thing, like you can't drive past there without going in to eat something.
No.
Because again, the master when it comes to seafood.
Oh,
so
yeah, the reputation just precedes him. Yeah, very, very talented guy, busy this time of year now. You're talking, and I like you, and it's rare. I know I kind of travel the country a wee bit more, but I haven't eaten there actually. I mean, I'm very much aware of his cooking.
The son is cooking over there with him now as well.
Yeah, that's probably what you have to do when you live in these neck of the woods as well. I could say, like, trying to get chefs now over there. Back in the days, it was probably easy. I mean, I think, sure, bringing it to Donegal. I started in the Rosapenna up at the north coast of Donegal, you know what I mean? Like, but look, if it's good enough and the talent is there, like, people will go, you know what I mean? But you just don't see the stream of young cooks the way we used to, you know what I mean? Like, where they're going to these far-flung spots to learn.
And what's going on in Dublin with all of these small restaurants and, like, you know, these pop-up style restaurants that, like, economy... cheaper to eat in, let's say. Is that happening all around the place? Are you seeing much of that? Because I know you've often said it to me when you're up in Dublin, like getting a really good bowl of noodles up on Cable Street, or, you know, it's literally like being in another European city. Well, there's a melting pot.
Yeah, there's a few chefs, I suppose, like Niall Davison. I know he's got Alta open back up again now.
That's down beside me. I haven't been.
He was doing pop-ups all over the place, from Slane into car parks in Dublin, and now, which is really cool. Obviously, he spent a lot of time in London, like, and look, London, in my point of view, is the epicentre of world
still is, isn't it?
At the minute, I'd say, I would say London stands out on its own, followed possibly by New York and then Paris. And I even would be reluctant to say Paris, but Paris at the very, very highest end is still incredible, you know what I mean? But there's an awful lot of shite in Paris.
I think it depends what you're looking for when you're going to, like,
it's like America, New York, it's what you're willing to spend. There's no in between, you know what I mean? Like, it's like you're bursting the budget and it's world class.
But, like, when you look at Dublin here, you've got these places opening up, serving amazing pizza. They're not doing anything else. Like, I know you often spin into Bambino's there to grab a slice when we finish the pod. Or what was the other one there? Is it called
Manny?
Yeah. Oh, you haven't been yet, have you?
They're, I haven't been like yet. No, because Kieran closes on a Monday. We usually record on a Monday. Yeah, but I got to know Kieran really well. He used to own an events company called Catch, and I did a few private gigs where I hired them boys myself. I don't know where I met
just
Kieran.
For dinner, like
Kieran and Freddie. Like, we did different bits and pieces together. They had an unbelievable company. And then obviously COVID would have decimated that events business, you know what I mean? And then he just started learning about pizza, and he did stages. I think he might have went to Ballymaloe to get fundamentals done. Then he went to Italy to learn. He goes, I'm going to open a pizza gaff, but I'm going to be unique. It's going to be a Roma style pizza. The hydration is his big thing. The crisp is his big thing. The shape is his big thing. And look, he has two things going for him, where he just got the absolute fish hook in every single diner. He got a carbonara slice. Who doesn't love carbonara? He turned just genius. One of the most talked about Italian dishes, mostly for how fucking wrong Irish people make it, right? But, you know, those that kind of know how to do it love showing you how they make their carbonara with egg yolks and Parmesan, right?
What about the mushrooms?
Kieran goes, yeah, and the cream. Kieran goes and puts on a carbonara slice And then what else does he do? He deep fat fries a lasagna. Now, what other way do you have to?
Have I not heard about this?
He's got a lasagna croquetta, man. He's,
have you had it?
Not yet, man, but I'm fucking talking about it right now. I'd nearly break into Manny. I mean, what a genius idea. Like, make a lasagna, chill it, portion it, pané it, and fry it, and fucking sell it. Sure.
How is it served?
You probably just get it on a little bit of parchment, like seasoned, and you just eat it like big fucking croquette. Unbelievable. So that just blew up all over on. And anyway, it can blow up all at once. People only go back when it's good. And it's just been a massive success story. It seems to be from the outset. They're flat out busy. There's lines every day. And I'll tell you now, Kieran McGonigal, you could not meet a nicer dude, mate. He really is one of the nicest guys in Irish.
Have you been?
I haven't yet, but it kind of got me to a question I was going to ask you both about food trucks. That the proliferation of food trucks, I think maybe before the pandemic was that, and the likes of the Misunderstood Heron, which I have been.
Yeah.
And
the lads,
what is
cook.
The view in the industry to these food trucks popping up? Is that like really providing an outlet for an up and coming chefs to be a bit more experimental and not be tied into the kind of restaurant?
No, well, I think when you look at when we went on over in LA, where they have a weather, like, I mean, our challenge over here with a food truck is that when it gets to the winter, it's bleeding freezing, where it's much harder to get people to queue up and then buy your wares off you and stand around and eat it. Where, like, I mean, I was in the States on my holidays there, as you know, and I had this, I went to this Mexican food truck and we had this burrito. The flavour that was in it, like, it was absolutely unreal. And the same when you're here, they've popped up, but I don't think they've ever went into the stratosphere of what goes on in Sydney and what goes on in LA and what goes on in New York because of the weather. Where, like, Cluckin' Chicken, you know, the lads that
they're unbelievable.
But they've moved from a food truck into premises now, and you've got the lads in Gorilla that are doing the
Is there a risk, though, that you're going to lose something when you go into a kind of a, and I suppose,
I think if your reputation, like the Cluck is a great example, because the boys are, Ian's a like the boys are
chef, real chef.
You know what I mean? Like, so, but they're, one of their first ones, or I don't know if they had more than one, maybe it's the only one, but it's the only one I know, must be out near Terranure, because my sister-in-law,
he's in a couple of venues now, he has a couple of restaurants.
She just lived up the street from them, and the first time I went, I was like, Jesus Christ, this is good. But it's good on a level where you're like, your jaw's on the floor. Like, it was just on. I mean, but what Garrett was saying there is there's lots of food trucks here, but they're not doing anything funky or too different. There's the ones that are doing it really brilliant, like them boys stand out from the crowd. Misunderstood Heron, magic. But they all kind of, a lot of the ones revert back to just the usual fucking shite you see in food trucks. It's called a spade, you know. Like, there's none really that I should be rhyming four or five off the top of my head that are absolutely
The lads at Gorilla, I went and had that sandwich that they're doing, and it's excellent. Yeah. Like, it's real, proper sourdough.
They also have bricks and mortar now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, there's one just around the corner from the hotel. But yeah, I think it gets that bit of a cult thing at the start, and then it's where do you, the challenge you run into, and this is just what I think, I might be wrong here, but so when you get to the winter, how do you get people to come and stand on the car park?
It's like a band, isn't it? You know, you want to be the one, you know, that kind of refrain you hear all the hips. Oh, I knew them before when they were just upstairs in Whelan's. And you go, oh
God, I used to have them competition with my buddies all the time. Like mentioned last week.
Oh, they moved downstairs to Whelan's. Good luck.
Watch the Killers at the Roxy with a few hundred people.
But is it that like that with food? I wonder, people like to be at the ground level, get in, and the lads are just scrapping around, and they have a little truck here, and it's a well kept secret. And that kind of cult.
I think it's always nice to have like that. Oh, you haven't been yet? I've been there. You know, it's easy to beat Gareth because he doesn't know how to. He thinks you need a passport to leave Dublin.
And you do?
Yeah.
But do you not?
You know what I mean? But you know what I saw this morning? Speaking of food trucks, the original Roy Choi, which the movie Chef is based on.
Oh, wow, okay.
Roy follows me on Twitter, which I didn't know until the other day. I saw something, but I saw a clip of Chef John Favreau talking to the wee boy out the back of the truck. Wee boy wanted to serve a Cubano. Like, I mean, I have a Cubano on one of the menus in the K Club. And that whole truck is nearly based around the Cubano, the famous sandwich. And but like Roy Choi literally made food trucks famous, and then John Favreau built it on that. Like, and that's really what created a lot of the culture around food trucks over in America. And then COVID here kind of helped make it. Ireland is so difficult to do fucking anything in, like, that getting a permit to put a truck here or there. Whereas in the States, just like, if you can park, you can park and sell, and they make your life easy, like, or whatever. Like, stop making a, like, just let people make money and have a good time and the land of the free and all of that there. But I think during COVID, it was something that became a wee bit.
Well, it obviously got amplified because people wanted to dine outside. And then, you know, a lot of chefs and people in the food world, you know, the establishment where they work closed. So then they were like, you know, I'll set up this small food truck and I'll try and make money. And it was literally a necessity. It was a way to, yeah, like, to turn a coin.
I suppose as well, it's a great way to broaden Irish people's palates.
And that's...
Because the costs are a little lower, so people, yeah, there's a bit more room to experiment. If you have a little truck, the costs aren't as crazy as if you own a...
Yeah. Well, depending where you live too. Like, I mean... You know, the palates in Dublin now, it's multicultural. Like,
it's,
I mean,
come on so much.
There's nothing that you, it's, could come up, yeah, with. I mean, one of the best I ever seen, there's a wee market there that you, I don't know if you're familiar with an arepa. Do you know what an arepa is? No, an arepa is, it's Venezuelan, and it's almost like a little bread bun or whatever that gets stuffed. If you picture like a South American empanada, but the Venezuelan version is an arepa. And, you know, where a hot dog has a bread roll, like this, whatever the mixtures, and I won't say now what goes into them because I'll probably say something wrong or whatever, but there's a wee food market that's right by, that is it Portobello Canal that the Barge pub is on?
Yeah, I think
it's every Thursday or every other Thursday along the water there. There's like a Maxwell garage, and in that neck of the woods on a Thursday, take a stroll along that canal and there's a food market in there, but there's one truck that's Venezuelan and she's making arepas. Worth a look.
Oh, wow.
Really cool.
Good shout.
And that's where food trucks are magic.
Yeah. And look, while you're talking about bread, it would be remiss of me not to mention Bread 41. Or like, you've been, have you?
Yes.
On Pear Street. Have you been there?
I've heard tell. I haven't yet to go.
On McCluskey.
Man, you have to go there.
Is it unbelievable, isn't it?
Like, it's literally, like, it made my bread, or what?
Have you not... But roll was, down for a wee sneaky pastry.
I must go.
But he, look, down.
There's often queues, and then.
Oh yeah, yeah. But he does, like, his sourdoughs. First and foremost, are like next level, like proper next level. He does sandwiches at lunchtime, and then he does all sorts of pastries and treats. And again, he's someone that I think at the start of COVID it was the bakery, and now beside that, he has the.
I think he would have done his early days with Patrick and Firehouse Bakery in Delgany, because he's an unbelievable baker. I think Owen might have worked there.
Someone tell me he worked in the States for a little while.
He could have done, but I could be wrong. But anyway,
I know, from a business point of view, I don't know.
He's a smart guy, green. I mean, if anybody's getting a green star, he should be. His face should be on the green star because
he's opened up a little.
He puts his money where his mouth is.
A development kitchen on the side of that, and he's just, I think, about to open a large bakery. I think it's out in Bray somewhere. I mean, he's really at the cutting edge of what he's doing. Like, you know, and I know there's loads of really amazing bakeries around. I mean, you just mentioned another one there, but there's loads of amazing artisanal bread getting.
Yeah, Bretzel, the boys at Bretzel. William. Yeah.
And really, like, the word bread is ponied around a lot because a lot of the stuff you wouldn't even call
and
it
actually,
bread.
When we're talking about bread, it would be remiss of us not to give a nod to Arbutus. Because William at Bretzel has just bought it. I think he was one of the first guys to ever, the guys that own Arbutus were one of the first to ever win a Michelin star in Cork in the '70s or the '80s it would have been. I know Mrs. Allen won a Michelin star back in the day.
She did.
But Arbutus, when it was a restaurant, won a star, and then when they closed the restaurant, it became a bakery. And over the years, the boys have been sharing techniques with one another over and back, became really, really good friends. And then just recently, I'm trying to think of the name of our Arbutus now. Is it Dennis? Or you might just check it out there for me. His name's, and I can see his face. His name's just left me. But him and William that owns Bretzel became friends, and they've just bought it, and they're going to let it run as is and then do whatever, which is lovely to hear of a place that has so much history in Cork, staying in the hands of somebody that with the love of the bread, and they're going to keep it going.
Well,
as is.
I had some guests out in Howth last week. We do a thing in the hotel called Spice Spoons. It's like, it's an experience where you go and you spend a little bit of time with me or one of the other chefs. We bring you out to Howth. We go out in a little boat, sail around or go around the harbour in the boat, come back in. we go into Kish Fish there and you go in and learn about the smoked salmon. You actually go behind the counter, go up and see the kilner. The lads out there talk you through the process of how fish are smoked. And then we go downstairs and have some fish and chips. And Dave, the guy that works out there, says to me, you know, we just won an award for our fish and chips. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm sure I told you how good it was. I actually forgot how good it was. And I mean, going in somewhere in Howth Harbour and having fish and chips where the fish is just after coming in that day, freshly battered in a beer batter.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I think of two places when you say fish and chips. And just before I go into fish and chips, Derek Ryan is the Michelin star chef that owned Arbitus. Sorry, Derek, your name just left me there for a second, brother. But McDonough's at the bottom of Shop Street in Galway, fish and chips.
Unbelievable.
Sweet mammy Jesus. If you've never, ever...
Mammy first, then Jesus.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you've never had a fish and chips out of McDonough's, you're not living. Me and girl,
a big pot of curry sauce on the side there to go with it.
One of my best buddies from college, Jerry Lynch, Garrod Lynch, owns the Old Post. And Jerry was down buying art years and years ago. And he texts me and goes, Spiral, that was my nickname at college. He goes, what are you at, sir? I says, I'm actually off today. He goes, unbelievable. He goes, I'm in Galway later on. I'll meet you. We swamped pints of steaks all day in the Keys. And then we went across the road, we had a fish and chips, back into the Keys for another feed of pints, back over to McDonald's for a second.
Round two.
For a second sitting later on. And you know, it was one of the best days of my life. It was one of the best days I ever had. It was just me and
Jerry. Did you ever tell him that?
I'm telling him now, but I'm sure he remembers that day too, because we just had an unbelievable day's crack.
But that's what I mean, like all around Ireland, like you're in this small little, like I was sitting there and I was actually with, last week when I was out there, I was with five food journalists from the UK, and they just could not believe that they were at the leaving the marker, the Antara of the marker, which is in the centre of the city, and they're like 25 minutes later, they're out in this small little quaint fishing village, getting onto a boat, going out around the harbour, coming back in, learning the process of how smoked salmon is made. And they were like, I can't believe that I was just in a city only minutes ago. And then, and we probably forget how lucky we are to have this type of stuff. And then following it up, and you know, with a simple dish of fish and chips, but if it's executed correctly,
fish and chips,
unbelievable, like absolutely unbelievable.
How do you make your batter?
Beer. I use beer in mine.
Never liked beer. Sparkling, cold batter.
Yeah, I mean, the key with fish and chips, as we know, is just making sure that the batter is really, really cold. So, you know, a handful of ice cubes. I like the beer. I just like the flavour it gives it.
Yeah.
It's probably a technique from when I worked out in Australia. I mean, beer battered whiting was a real thing in all the menus in Sydney when I was there. But really, it's finding those dishes are, you know, and I think we're at the getting much better at telling our food story here in Ireland. Like, we have the best beef. You hear us talking about it week in, week out. We've the best beef in the world. We've the best cheese in the world. We've the best lamb in the world. Yeah. You know, so there's so many brilliant things happening with Irish food. And then we haven't even spoke about pubs, because that's another thing that's you can't get anywhere else. You know, I mean, every country you go to, and I mean every country you go to, the Irish bar is there and the Irish pub is there. But it never feels like what you get here.
Yeah, but the best pubs here, I suppose, you chat about, it could be remiss of me not to go to Donegal. The first thing I think on when you say pub is pub and food. And I go to the Old Glen Bar in Donegal, up outside Carrigart. Stay at the Rosapenna, golf St. Patrick's or the Sandy Hills. Have the time of your life. Eat pizza at Goose and Gander. Eat by day at Fisk beside the Harbour Bar. Have a pint overlooking Downing's Bay and then go for dinner in the Glen Bar. And
if we left now, what time would we get there?
And tell me that you're...
How would I eat before we record this fucking podcast?
Tell me
that
my mouth is watering. Is yours?
Christ. Yeah. It's like I just got my braces in it.
Well, that's exactly what
I need
I
a mop
do.
Here. There's all drilled on the floor beside it.
That is exactly what I do a couple of times a year. I'll go to Donegal. If I don't stay with family, I'll try now. From last year, I stayed in the Rosapenna. Father Charity up there is a local priest. He's a good friend of mine. Simon Byrne, who's the pro in Hermitage here in Lucan. Simon used to, my uncle used to caddy for Simon when he was a pro. We used to share a room with my auntie's gaff. So Simon will go up in the summertime. We'll all go for dinner in the Rosapenna. It's absolutely just magical. It's kind of old fashioned. It's eaten Dover sole, overlooking Downing's Bay, man. And you golf the next day. You might one night eating fisk or go for pints at the Harbour Bar, which is just overlooking the beach at the other side. Or you could go fine dining and go to the Old Glen Bar. You could go into Letterkenny and go to the Lemon Tree with the boys, Chris and the boys up there, just cooking some of the most unbelievable stuff you've ever seen. And then heading home back to Longford the next day, stopping Benny and Combal Buffet, and you chat about Bakers. Joe O'Hara, in my opinion, up there in the best two or three bakers of sourdough and any kind of bread you can think on. And his wife, Benny's a chef, went to college with me too. And this isn't a nod to Friends. They're just absolute, unbelievably brilliant at what they do, you know.
I'm down in Leitrim now next week or the week after, and I'm going to drop into Shamlin. Oh, I've never eaten with him.
Have you not?
No, I've never eaten him with Shamlin. Yeah. I believe he's doing some amazing things with, you know.
So he's got My Kitchen by Sham Hanifan.
And is it like a cook? He's doing demos like a cookery schooler.
I'm booked in to cook in September, actually, yeah. Sunil's done a night, Paul Flynn's done a night, and I think Derry's done a night already. I told him I needed to do it later in the year because I'm too busy in the K Club at the minute. But yeah, his top floor at My Kitchen, it's his new place. It's kind of like a daytime place.
Yeah, yeah.
Coffee shop, pastries, breads, bakes, and then just nice wee menu as well. It's just in a little retail park as you leave Carrick and Shannon on the Sligo Road. But he also opens his flagship restaurant at the weekends, The Cottage in Jamestown, which is on the Dublin side of Carrick and Shannon. As you're heading in, you turn off the N4 to go to The Cottage. That's where he would have made his reputation. And then obviously he's in partnership as well in Buffalo Boy, which is more casual. Sort of he's a big Argentinian grill in there, like steaks and cocktails.
Sham
owns Carrick on Shannon. Yeah, he's a great chef, doing great things. And are you staying over, or is it a weekend, or during the week, or restaurant are you going to?
I don't know yet. I haven't really booked anywhere yet, but we're staying in we've an Airbnb. We're going down with Denise's parents owned the home down there for a long time, and our brother is actually
remembered our buddy Al from Johnstone Beef fame is turning 50.
That's right, yeah. That's all down around that neck of the woods.
Yeah,
but yeah, we'll get down, and we've spent many a summer down there, you know. So normally when I'm down there, we're doing a lot of barbecuing, and but my Denise's brother is just home from Australia. He's been out there for the last 4 or 5 years, and I seen him over the weekend, and he was saying just the pint of Guinness in Ireland. And we take it for granted, right? But
it's different.
Like, I was like, we need to go into town. We'll go into Towners and have a couple of pints. And we go into O'Donoghue's, and we might ramble around to Kyo's and then around to our Riley's.
O'Donoghue's.
Unbelievable. And like, you're not in there eating gourmet meals, but you're supping gourmet pints of Guinness and bags of crisps. And that's really, I think, what the Irish Dublin pub is about, certainly.
What's your favourite pub in Dublin?
I don't like...
Let's go full Cassie Stokes on it here now.
Yeah. Well, look, I when I was on Cassie Stokes, I said Towners would be up there. Yeah. And maybe it was because of the early part of my career when I was learning my trade and like going in there. Just, I have nice memories from that place. The beer garden at the back of it. I was telling you the story a little while ago. I was in it with we were out for dinner, and then we went in for a few pints afterwards. And I went to use the loo. The loo used to be just at the back of the bar, right, and it was gone. And they have this little snug thing. And here I was.
What?
I said to Jerry behind the bar, and you know the Towners, the barman, the two head barman are Tom and Jerry, which always makes me smile. But I went. I was like, "Where's the toilet gone?" And he was like, "We took that out there about 10 years ago," and I was like, "Oh my god, there's a bit." It hadn't been 10 years. The last time I was there, I must have had a few too many pints of Guinness. I couldn't remember where the Jacks was. And then you go back out to the back, massive big beer garden.
It's like Sean's Bar.
It's unbelievable.
Oh no, it's 5 times the size since the smoking ban.
But you, literally, when you're in the bar part of Towners, you wouldn't even know that was going on out the back.
Just a bit worried about where were you going then?
Yeah, no.
If the Jacks has been gone 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Denise, where was he going?
Get Gareth for fuck's
sake. Yeah. But I mean, there's loads of these.
I love queues for a pint. At the
brilliant.
In there.
You often go in there, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
And what's the, when you go into an Irish or a pub in Dublin, do you want to be left alone or do you want to?
It depends on the day, actually. Yeah, you never are left alone though, because it's only whenever you're in Dublin you realise just how many people watch the restaurant. It's hilarious, you know. I probably need.
I thought you were going to just say just how friendly the people in Dublin are, but you went after you
just
to give
so
yourself
famous.
A plug. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
He's got a,
I thought you were going to say
bad haircut. And everybody, you don't remember me. I'm the only one stupid.
I wonder what's wrong to do when you open your mouth and go, oh yeah, it's definitely him.
No, I love talking to people, man. I love having the crack. The last night I was in there, we were chatting to Roy Curtis the last night he was in here. And
he literally wanted to make me run out of the studio here and go straight.
It was joyous.
Yeah.
The way he describes going into a pub.
Yeah, but he really catches the essence of what a bar is and what it gives you. You know what I mean? And that relationship like that you have with certain people over the years, when it's done in a, you know, I know we had Chris on a show there, when, you know, we have people on that have an addictions to alcohol and all. But when you look at it just as pub and pints and crack and whatever, pubs are a brilliant thing. Like, you know what I mean? My brother Kevin works in the hospital in Letterkenny, but he's ran bars for years and he's just great crack. Like, I think of Sean Donoghue, JV Donoghue's, we call it just John V's in Granard where I live. Like, I go in to see Sean. I go in to shoot the shit with him. He's a good friend. I'll have one or two sneaky pints with him. And
I'm smiling at you talking about when you were, you know, these pubs from where you're local when you grew up. And the pub where I grew up, where I'm from, in a place in Dublin called Donamead, had no windows in it. You ever heard of it?
No.
Donamead Inn. And like, you know, not for the faint-hearted, yeah, right? Yeah, but yeah. When I grew up, the Donamead Inn was where I used to watch football, where I seen my friends, and you know, and it, you know, had a little bit of a reputation. I think
what
when you're from there,
kind of a northern mucker like me now rolled in there with a mohawk and the chest out. How long am I lasting without getting my mouth?
Not long, probably. No, not at all. But this is the thing, you
what's
know, like
the crack boys.
But it's closed down now, and it's in a shopping centre in Donamead, the Donamead Inn, and there's this. It's nearly like an urban myth now of when it's going to open back up.
But some of the best nights I've ever had in the pub are the ones with the so-called reputation.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, I tell you, you know, I did the car court management or somebody, some management company hired me for a few Christmases to do cookery demonstrations in all these different shopping centres, right? They own them all from the park in Limerick to the Long Walk or whatever in Dundalk and Galway and beyond. There's one in Letterkenny. But they also own the Donamead Shopping Centre. And the one, so I used to go in early, and was there a Kerrigan's Butchers
at
the
Donamead
Shopping Centre? So I'd go in and I would buy the meat and stuff in the shops in the shopping centre. And then, you know,
are you telling me you were doing cookery demonstrations in the Donamead Shopping Centre?
I did, and it was packed. And I tell you right here, right now, of all the years I did it, I did about 7 or 8 shopping centres every Christmas. The nicest people I met were in Donamead.
There you go.
They were absolutely.
Hello, Donamead. I said, what pub are you going to tell us about there? You have me intrigued now. You said the pubs with reputation.
Just generally, you know, that I think I find I have an issue. The same with restaurants. If I've been told, oh, this is, you know,
dodgy.
Brass fittings or whatever, I just get instantly uptight and I don't relax, or, you know, I don't like the white table service, you know, on that.
It's not for
but,
you.
Some of the best pubs I've been, not just in Ireland, but in the world, but particularly in Ireland, you'd walk in and you go, oh,
yeah,
and then they just look around. They're all sound. If you're not a dickhead,
yeah,
and often serve the best pints, best atmosphere. If there's a pool table and a mat shown in the corner,
you're laughing.
Oh, lads, and a bit of a maybe you can step outside, have a sit down, have a pint. There's nothing. There's very few things I can mention on this podcast legally that are better than sitting out when the sun is out and you have a pint in your hand and a couple of good pals.
Yeah,
yeah,
and you're having. The crack and the chats. People are walking by. Peter's is great for this.
Yeah.
Nearby
here.
I think there's some magic in the long haul.
Yeah.
And I have to talk locally because I spend a lot of time in Castlebar. There's a place called Paddy Moran's that has that unaffected, genuine, sincere. The lads know who you are. You go in. It's not like you feel like Norman Cheers or anything, but the pints, you know, they're a little bit cheaper, but the atmosphere is like a bar in Star Wars. I like the pubs that are like a bar in Star Wars. Walsh's and Stony Bar is the best pub in the world. But you get every type.
Yeah.
You have an old boy that, you know, maybe he's been going there for 40 years. You have a lad who turned up on a unicycle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, you've
but they're such an integral part of the community.
All walks of life in one pub, everyone getting on, and you wouldn't talk to people that you would normally, you know, that you would maybe avoid. You're chatting cheek by jowl in a great pub, and the barman knows your order. I can tell you right now, in my mind, there's a no better night out.
Totally agree with you.
Yeah, I remember one on the Aran Islands. Argentina were playing Holland. I think it must have been a World Cup year. And Jerry again was in that crew and his wife. And we were over on the islands. And I remember we did a tour of the island that one day and then found this wee bar down by the water, down by the pier. Just started supping pints of Guinness and playing. There was a jukebox out the back. We found this room. There was nobody else in the place. There was a pool table, a jukebox.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll never forget that day to the day I die. We just fucking drank pints, listened to great tunes, man. It was magical. Magical.
And if you're near water, for some reason.
Yeah.
It just hits different.
It does.
If you can hear seawater.
That's why Harbour Bar and Downing's.
Yeah, there you go.
You're looking at the water. You just feel like you're on holiday.
Well, when you're in the Donoghue Inn, there's water somewhere, I think. It's probably
coming down the wall.
Broken shower.
Yeah.
Coming down people's foreheads. Sweat.
Exactly. It's probably 4 miles out towards something or something. But so with that being said, you have to listen to us asking people every week what's their debt row meal. So I think we'll have to ask you, Ed.
Me?
What's your debt row meal, I think, is a nice way.
We learned enough about food now, actually. Course dinner.
I was asked this by Owen Murphy, who you know, when he was, celebrity reporter for the Mail at the time. He took me out for a lunch and he asked me this question. And my answer was so banal, I think. It never made the paper. And
I love it.
It was so boring.
But only you and Owen know that until now.
I have to ask him, says, whatever happened? He goes, what a dreadful answer. But I'm going to give it again. My grandmother's soda bread and a fresh egg from her farm, real butter and a little pinch of salt, and 4 or 5 slices of that with the egg on top of it. I honestly, to this day, It whooshes me back like that shot in Jaws where the zoom in track, and I'm back at that table, my uncle's feet steaming by the fire because he's just come in from a day's work. He's muttering and jabbering away in Monaghan, which I don't understand, and she puts this in front of me, and it is to this day the nicest thing.
Well, you just put me in the room with you.
Yeah.
And that was unbelievable. Best answer we've had.
I can smell the range. I can hear
and
the chatter.
Fuck Owen Murphy now for leaving that out of the paper.
Yeah. It wasn't quite.
He couldn't deliver it with your dulcet tones, though. You know what I mean?
But honest to God, to this day, that would be the one thing. And you're scooping out the egg and it's as bright and yellow as the sun. And the butter, you've scraped it on and you let the egg melt the butter on top of the soda bread. And you're chunking into it in the first bite, and it's all, honest to God, that is for me, that would be my death row meal.
And really, that's what this podcast is about. That's what food is about. It's bringing you, like you just brought us there, I can smell the agar too.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm right there with you. Yeah. I'm thinking, well, I hope she fries 2 eggs now.
And
we
used to work with wild oysters and Wilkes, so I know exactly whenever you take off a pair of wellies and you put
that's it.
Big woolly socks steam. on a mantle beside an open fire.
It's like the mirage effect you see in the desert.
I've seen that so often.
Coming off his socks.
Yeah.
And they're all just, you know, and a pack of 20 carols.
Majors.
A furnace, like you'd get in a steam train.
Yeah.
And she's piling in, and then she looks over at me and she goes, "Are you ready?" And I say, and she sits it down. And I'm like, "Oh, lads,
this is here we go."
Where was your granny? Where was
it's just a place called Scott's House, Monaghan. So not far from Clonus.
Monaghan is a weird old accent, all right. It's
Donegal. You wouldn't understand half of it, but you'd get through it. But then they'd be watching Downwind in the All Ireland for the 15th time. That table come out, and then you're watching us having your eggs as happy as a child could be. Yeah.
Magic.
Super.
And on that bombshell.
Okay, so thanks for tuning in and listening. And you had to listen to myself, Gary and Ed reminiscing about the world of food in Ireland. And what a way to wrap up, Ed. I never thought a slice of soda bread and an egg would make me feel so emotional.
God's
breath. It was wonderful. Out of me there. That was
so another great show. Thanks again for listening in. And again, as always, don't forget to subscribe and like and share to all you other podcast listeners out there, wherever you get your, wherever you're listening to us. So thanks a million. Talk to you next week.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Subscribe for free on the Go Loud app and never miss an episode.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.